Hi, this is Bela Cochran-Petcher from Columbus, Ohio, and I run Anyway Records. I write a little on the side, and I'm also a social worker. This is also being recorded by my friend Chris Forbes, so thanks, Chris.
Sure.
Christmas. Ohio is either filled with sunshine that feeds the summertime humidity like gasoline on a backyard fire pit, or it is a mass of solid cinder block gray. The gray comes in suddenly, overnight, usually arriving in November 3rd or so, and departing as the first tulips pop out of the frozen soil. In the middle, there is football. Lots of football. Snowed-in days. Ice storms both inside and outside of family dwellings. And of course, Christmas, which feels like the last port of call on a 10,000-mile journey. It arrives in Technicolor, with the hidden hope that it may somehow stave off the impending gloom of the coming months. Months that, when they arrive, get stuck like glue on the bottom of every Ohioan's soul. But for a brief flicker of days, Christmas is the salve that stems the desolation that so many Midwesterners feel crawling over their very essence. We never had money, neither with my mother or later when I lived with my father. As we listened to $1.99 Christmas collections from Woolworths and Gold Circle, sung by choirs that I'm pretty sure were non-existent prior to the recording of the record, names like the Mercy Tabernacle of Los Angeles or the Austrian Choir and Bells, we didn't care as long as the song sounded glorious as they bounced off the red and silver glare of bulbs. Stringy, shiny Christmas tree icicles and garland that was carefully wrapped around the freshly cut tree. Presents were usually sparse, and we knew at least a couple of them would hold socks, underwear, and a new shirt, the most basic of clothing that was required wearing, would pass for a genuine present. And we would open them with a falling, "Ah!" a sliver of a smile, and thank our mother. Being from a broken home, we celebrated Christmas at both parents and both sets of grandparents, which meant a lot of small items, clumsy grandparents trying to buy presents for children who are of a much different time period than they were. My grandfather, Austin, fought in World War II, a barrel-chested man who tended to be on the quiet side. He was gentle, and he and Grandma Rosemary always had a tree, easy-listening music playing Christmas favorites, a splendid traditional tree drenched in silver cascading artificial icicles, with presents pushed under the tree. And with the sweet smell of Jim Beam with the splash of water and Winston cigarette smoke dug deep into the thick woolly carpet, it was more like a Christmas on the variety shows that were so prominent in the early 70s. My other grandmother, Isabel, would build a small fortress of ornaments, nativity scenes, and a pool of presents that stretched across the living room. It was as if the tree had been giving birth to presents since Thanksgiving. My last Christmas before sobriety was a wreck. My wife and I were separated not just due to her job in Gainesville, Florida, but by the unspoken voice of alcohol, whose late-night tenor howled in my ears. That Christmas, I spent bouncing around Columbus, prancing, dancing, and finally stumbling to the last vestiges of dive bars in the short north area of Columbus. Finally, being hounded out of the final one for using the Lord's name in vain, as I clumsily held on to someone I shouldn't have been holding on to. The next morning I awoke, alone, in my bed, realizing that somehow I'd have to drive 2 hours to my mother's to pretend as if I really cared. As a parent, it is difficult to make your own rituals, such as apple picking, which we did for nearly 6 years before the orchard we went to closed up the trees and left for better pastures. Or how to purchase gifts, with my sense of guilt over a childhood that seemed lacking in material goods, although rich in memories and love, I tend to overbuy. With books, clothes, and one big item, while my wife, she of Dutch blood, insists on one or two items. "We never got more than one in the Netherlands," she states as if this will repulse my inner yearnings to get the kids whatever they want. We balance both Sinterklaas, the Dutch version of Santa, who lives in Spain, arrives on a wooden boat nearly a month before December 5th, with a very un-PC bounty of helpers, despairingly called Black Pete's. But the Dutch are practical and understand the power of magic in a child's life. The whole country buys into the myth of Sinterklaas, with an almost daily television program titled Sinterklaas Journaal. A film crew follows Sinter, while some hapless Peets, who this year wear a variety of colors, almost disrupt the entire holiday. Every year. The kids love it, and it cemented their belief in Sinter. Because, hey, if it's on television, it's real. Our daughter, Saskia, aged 11, quit believing when she was 7. While Bruno, aged 8, still believes wholeheartedly in Sinter, but quit believing in Santa last year. Do you believe in Santa, Bruno?
Of course.
How about Santa? Dad, don't be silly. As this dark year comes to a close, I believe that this will be our last year of holiday innocence. We cut down a tree every year, and on the tree farm we go to, they have pictures of our family over the years, with crooked grins, bulky winter caps and gloves, the children holding on to powdered hot chocolate. We are quite literally frozen in time. A few years ago, we cut a mid-sized tree down, and I hoisted it on my shoulder, trudging through the crunchy snow to the tractor that would carry us back to the barn. When we got home, I again lifted the tree up on my shoulder and gently placed it in the same corner where the tree sits every year. A week later, while attending classes in Cleveland, a giant rash down my neck, arms, and stomach made the day-long courses almost unbearable. The tree still had the dried vines of poison ivy wrapped around its stalk. Another short-lived tradition. As I get older, climbing into my late 40s, I want the magic that swells through the songs, the lips and the smiles of my community. To gaze up at the stars and to think, just for a few moments, that yes, there were once miracles, even if they just rested on the minds and tongues of a little boy wondering how another little boy was born 2,000 years ago and changed the world. I see the spell of disbelief and curiosity in my children. I want to freeze that feeling they have, to be able to swallow it myself and ingest in the holiday of miracles. Maybe it will happen this year.